Today is Friday, March 21st, 2025, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Trump's call for the annihilation of Yemen and the U.S. war to subjugate the Middle East by Andre Damon. As the Trump administration doubles down on its plans to ethnically cleanse and annex the Gaza Strip, the U.S. has launched a new military offensive targeting Yemen and ultimately Iran as part of a systematic escalation of the U.S.-Israeli war to reshape the Middle East under Washington's domination. On Sunday, the U.S. military launched a major attack on Yemen, the impoverished country of 34.7 million people located in the southwest corner of the Arabian Peninsula, followed by days of continuous bombardment. Wednesday, President Donald Trump pledged to, quote, completely annihilate, end quote, Yemen, declaring, quote, it's not even a fair fight, and never will be, they will be completely annihilated, end quote. He proceeded to threaten Iran, saying it will, quote, suffer the consequences, and those consequences will be dire, end quote. In declaring his intent to annihilate Yemen, Trump invoked the words of his political role model, Adolf Hitler. On March 30, 1941, Hitler told his assembled generals that the war Nazi Germany was planning against the Soviet Union would be a Vernichtungskampf, or a struggle of annihilation. True to his promise, Hitler waged the war to destroy the Soviet Union, involving the systematic massacre and starvation of the civilian population, leading to the deaths of over 30 million people. Trump's threat to annihilate a small, impoverished country on the other side of the world expresses the degree to which the language of genocide, the operative concept of the U.S.-Israeli effort to expel the people of Gaza from their land through massacre and starvation, increasingly defines broader areas of American foreign policy. Trump is vowing to treat all resistance to direct U.S. colonial subjugation in the way that its Israeli client treats the Palestinians, through extermination. Before the Gaza genocide, Yemen was the world's leading example of the deliberate mass starvation of civilians at the behest of the imperialist powers. Between 2015 and 2022, Yemen was subjected to a Saudi-U.S. campaign of bombardment and deliberate starvation that led to the deaths of as many as 400,000 people. As Kamel Jandoubi, the chairperson of a UN expert group on Yemen, said in 2020, quote, civilians in Yemen are not starving, they are being starved, end quote, citing the deliberate U.S.-backed blockade of Yemen's ports by Saudi Arabia. At the time, the conduct of Saudi Arabia in Yemen was recognized as criminal even by the government's funding and arming its military. In the November 2019 presidential debate, U.S. President Joe Biden accused the Saudis of, quote, going in and murdering children, and they're murdering innocent people, adding, they have to be held accountable, end quote. He pledged, quote, we are not going to, in fact, sell more weapons to them, end quote. But that is precisely what Biden did upon assuming this presidency. He sold the despotic Saudi regime $650 million in missiles in 2021 and subsequently lifted all restrictions on arms sales to the kingdom. In 2022, Biden proceeded to give a public fist bump to de facto Saudi ruler Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the man who orchestrated the 2018 murder of Jamal Khashoggi, an American citizen and columnist for the Washington Post. Bin Salman's barbaric regime presided over the highest number of executions in Saudi history during 2024, when more than 300 people were put to death. The immediate context of the renewed U.S. assault on Yemen is the systematic scrapping of any pretense by Israel, with the support of the United States, that it is working towards a ceasefire in Gaza. After having carried out daily attacks over the two-month period during which a ceasefire was nominally in force, killing hundreds of people, Israel has now abandoned any adherence to the so-called ceasefire. 19 days ago, Israel blocked the entry of all food, water, and medical care into Gaza. This week, it renewed its full-scale aerial bombardment, killing over 400 people in a single day on Tuesday. Under the terms of the ceasefire negotiated 2 months ago, Yemen's Houthi movement, which controls territory home to 60% of the country's people, suspended attacks on shipping transiting the Red Sea. In response to Israel's imposition of the total blockade of food, water, fuel, and medical supplies to Gaza, the Houthi government said it would target Israeli ships in the Red Sea. The U.S. has in turn seized upon this warning by the Houthis to renew its assault on Yemen as part of a military escalation throughout the wider Middle East. Figures within the Trump administration are openly advocating a direct attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. For over four decades, American imperialism has been determined to reverse the consequences of the Iranian Revolution of 1978-79, which destroyed the bloodstained tyranny of the U.S. stooge Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The September 11, 2001 terror attacks provided a pretext for the launching of a massive military operation in the Middle East aimed at restoring direct U.S. domination over the region. Following the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, U.S. President George W. Bush proclaimed the so-called Axis of Evil, including Iraq and Iran. He declared, quote, "This campaign will not be finished on our watch, yet it must be and it will be waged on our watch," end quote. His proclamation was followed the next year by the 2003 invasion of Iraq. At the time of the 9/11 attacks, General Wesley Clark said a decision had been made to go to war with, quote, seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and then finishing off Iran, end quote. The Bush administration was only able to carry out full-scale invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, but the Obama administration launched regime change operations in Libya and Syria, succeeding in overthrowing the Libyan government in 2011. The Syrian government, after over a decade of war, was brought down in December 2024. In 2006, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice praised that year's U.S.-supported Israeli invasion of Lebanon, proclaiming, quote, "the new Middle East," end quote, in which the U.S. would wage war against countries aligned with Iran with increased violence. Rice's term, the new Middle East, has been the watchword of the regime of Benjamin Netanyahu in carrying out the Gaza genocide and waging war throughout the region. Just days before the Hamas-led uprising of October 7, 2023, Netanyahu traveled to the UN to display a map showing Israel annexing the entire territory of Palestine. There he declared, quote, "We'll build a new corridor that connects Asia through the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Israel to Europe," end quote. The broader framework of this effort to impose direct U.S. colonial control over the Middle East is the U.S. effort to position itself for a looming conflict with China. The Middle East is home to 50% of the world's proven oil reserves and 40% of its proven natural gas reserves. Perhaps more importantly, approximately 9% of the world's sea traffic and 20% of the world's container traffic passes through the choke point of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which connects the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. Yemen occupies the entire eastern and northern shorelines of this critical waterway. As Bloomberg News explained, quote, "massive volumes of crude oil, diesel, natural gas, and other petroleum products and bulk commodities from the Middle East and India travel through the Red Sea on their way to Europe, as it's the shortest route between these regions. Western sanctions on Russia following its full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022 turned the Red Sea into part of a vital trade artery for crude flowing in the other direction as well, as Moscow is now selling the lion's share of its petroleum to Asia," end quote. Under Trump, U.S. imperialism is seeking to seize and dominate the key choke points of global trade in order to prepare for conflict with China. This includes not only the domination of the Red Sea, but also Trump's plan to seize the Panama Canal and annex Canada and Greenland to control a future Northwest Passage through the Arctic. Global war and the drive to establish a dictatorship at home are essential components of Trump's program. Trump seeks, through unlimited military violence and the use of coercive economic tools like tariffs, to secure American global domination, principally against China. His escalation of war is inseparable from the frontal assault on the working class being carried out by his administration, which is aiming to liquidate the bedrock social programs of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and use the proceeds for rearmament and bank bailouts. None of this can be done without the turn to dictatorial forms of rule. The Trump administration has sought to slander opponents of U.S. foreign policy as terrorists, using the police state machinery of the U.S. immigration system to illegally detain and deport them. As Trump's war throughout the Middle East escalates, including the potential direct targeting of Iran, this campaign to silence all opposition to the policies of his administration will extend to American citizens as well. Trump's plans for global war require the erection of a dictatorship and the impoverishment of the working class. For this reason, the struggle against his administration cannot be limited either to opposition to the Gaza genocide or his attack on democratic rights. The only social force capable of stopping Trump's efforts to create a dictatorship in the U.S. is the working class. The central task is building a socialist leadership in the working class, armed with a theoretical program of Marxism, so that it can be mobilized in an industrial and political struggle to put an end to imperialist war and the capitalist profit system that is the root cause of the war. The Socialist Equality Party and the International Youth and Students for Social Equality, the IYSSE, are in the forefront of this struggle. Trump signs executive order directing the closure of the U.S. Department of Education by Nancy Hanover. On Thursday, U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order directing the U.S. Education Secretary, Linda McMahon, to, quote, take all necessary steps to facilitate the closure of the Department of Education, ED, and return authority over education to the states and local communities, end quote. Titled, in typical Orwellian fashion, Improving Education Outcomes by Empowering Parents, States, and Communities, the executive order claims that shuttering the 45-year-old department would allow, quote, children and families to escape a system that is failing them, end quote. With rows of small children seated at school desks, staged as props beside him, Trump emphasized, quote, my administration will take all lawful steps to shut down the department. We're going to shut it down and shut it down as quickly as possible. It's doing us no good. End quote. He added that it would be great, pointing to Texas and Florida schools and suggesting the cost would probably be half. He professed his love for educators and called the expansion of merit pay, a scheme that undermines teacher salaries and punishes them for the impact of decades of public school defunding. Referring to the $1.6 trillion in student loans currently overseen by the ED, Trump urged it to exit all bank functions. Ending federal subsidies for student loans would deprive countless young people of the ability to attend college. The administration claimed that the ED's core functions would remain, citing Pell Grants, Title I aid for low-income schools, and special education. However, Trump has previously called for ending the entitlement status of Title I and Individuals with Disabilities Act and transforming them into block grant, whose funding is easily cut. Additionally, he failed to mention his plan for universal vouchers to carry out mass privatization of schools. Trump is seeking to reverse the historic gains of the fight for universal, high-quality public education, the product of 250 years of struggle in the U.S. This is an attack not just on current students and their families, but on the collective knowledge, culture, and scientific achievements of the whole society. The money-mad American oligarchy is wielding a wrecking ball to dismantle public education. If they're not stopped, the outcome will be a vast expansion of the class divide, where the working class receives only a minimal, work-oriented education, while the financial elite purchases the finest education available. Workers and young people will not accept this lying down. Polling shows that two-thirds of Americans oppose closing the department. Educators have staged protests over the past 5 weeks throughout the U.S., opposing the shutdown and many more against the ongoing cuts to school districts across the country. No modern president has ever tried to unilaterally shut down a department, and no cabinet-level department has been abolished since the Post Office Department was replaced with the United States Postal Service by Richard Nixon in 1971, setting that agency up for the current privatization efforts by Trump. Trump lyingly claims that he is speaking for millions of parents who are supposedly clamoring for education to be, quote, run by the states, end quote. The reality is that he represents a filthy rich oligarchy that wants to privatize education and transfer billions from public coffers to edu-businesses and Wall Street. A significant element of this attack stems from the well-placed fear by the oligarchy of the masses of working people. They aim to use the attacks on public education to stifle critical thought in the working class and attempt to browbeat youth with right-wing patriotism, racism, xenophobia, religion, and anti-scientific drivel. The Democratic Party, as with the Republican Party, also a party of Wall Street, downplayed the existential nature of the attack. The top Democrat on the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, Representative Bobby Scott of Virginia, issued a statement describing the order as, quote, dangerous and illegal, end quote, and citing the, quote, disparities affecting low-income students, students of color, and those with disabilities, end quote. Expressing the Democratic Party's policy of complete subservience to these attacks, he registered disappointment in McMahon and urged his Republican colleagues to, quote, hold the president and Elon Musk accountable, end quote. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten evinced similar complacency. She said, see you in court, and reiterated that only Congress can lawfully close the department. Despite Linda McMahon's promise to assist Trump in closing the ED from the beginning, Weingarten and National Education Association President Betsy Pringle assured her of their intention to, quote, find common ground, end quote. As Trump signed the executive order, Weingarten was in Chicago, collaborating with Mayor Brandon Johnson, a former teachers' union lobbyist, to block a strike by 25,000 educators in the nation's third-largest school district. At a press conference outside of the Chicago Board of Education, Weingarten admitted that some $100 billion in funding would be effectively abolished from schools coming from the federal government, and that the diversion of this money to the states would go to those like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who would, quote, voucherize and privatize their schools, end quote. During the press conference, a WSWS reporter asked Weingarten, given the existential threat to public education and the fact that any contract signed in Chicago would not protect educators and students from massive budget cuts, quote, why isn't your union and the NEA calling out a strike on Chicago and all national educators to stop this threat? And isn't preventing a strike just emboldening Trump to carry out this attack? End quote. The AFT president, a member of the Democratic National Committee, replied, quote, what we are doing is fighting in the courts, the court of public opinion. We're fighting in Congress. There may be a time when there will be a national strike in America, end quote, before saying the most important thing right now was getting a contract signed in Chicago. In other words, the AFT bureaucracy is working to prevent a strike that could become the catalyst of a national movement to defend public education. While the Democrats and the Democratic Party-aligned unions are preaching legal remedies and blocking mass protests, Trump is openly defying the law. This was underscored by his refusal to obey a federal court order over illegal deportations this week. Jamal Green, a law professor at Columbia University, described this as dictatorial power, adding that the words, quote, constitutional crisis, end quote, fail to, quote, capture the gravity of the situation, end quote. Furthermore, the dismantling of the Department of Education has already taken place in plain view, with or without a formal dissolution by Congress. 2,000 out of the 4,200 employee workforce have already been laid off, with multiple ED functions eliminated or rendered ineffective. For example, this week the department stopped accepting income-driven student loan repayments and removed the application from its website, prompting a lawsuit by the AFT. While the agency is on life support, Trump's congressional supporters are moving to deliver the legal coup de grace to the cabinet-level department as soon as practicable. Last month, Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky reintroduced his bill to abolish the ED by December 2026. Funding cuts are also underway. The recently enacted Republican-drafted continuing resolution to fund the government until September 30th, which only passed thanks to Democratic support in the Senate, cut education by $290 million. This may just be the beginning, as Trump has already withheld congressionally appropriated funds. Educators fear that programs not explicitly funded under the CR will go, including Title II grants for improvement and professional development, to the tune of $2.2 billion, migrant education grants, $376 million, magnet schools grants, $139 million, and McKinney-Vento Homeless Act grants, $129 million. Over the past month, the Department of Education has already been gutted. The Office for Civil Rights has lost over 40% of its workforce. Six regional offices, Boston, Chicago, Cleveland, New York City, Philadelphia, and San Francisco, have been shuttered. In fiscal year 2024, parents and students petitioned the OCR for help with 22,687 complaints, approximately half of which were fighting for legally mandated disability services. The Institute of Education Sciences, the department's research division, has lost at least 62% of its staff. IES has played a crucial role in promoting evidence-based instructional methods, including much of the research that supports the science of reading movement. These reductions have also hollowed out the National Center for Education Statistics and the National Center for Education Research. Data crucial for shaping educational policy and research is being compromised, potentially eliminating any objective measure of student achievement nationwide. It also threatens the accuracy of data collection regarding poverty, teacher shortages, and student absenteeism. The Office of Special Education and Rehabilitation Services, responsible for distributing grants for special education services and monitoring state compliance with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, has been cut. 30 states and the District of Columbia were already out of compliance with federal disability law as of June 2024. The Office of English Language Acquisition is nearly eliminated. This office mandated compliance with the Supreme Court's 1974 Lau versus Nichols decision, which guarantees English learners the right to English language instruction. And the Office of Education Technology was also eliminated, assisting states and districts in implementing technology, including artificial intelligence. It is the working class that must intervene to stop these attacks. On March 15th, the Educators Rank and File Committee held a powerful meeting of nearly 200, including teachers across the U.S. and from Brazil, Sri Lanka, Canada, and the United Kingdom, opposing the toothless measures of petitions, social media campaigns of the trade union apparatus. It called for mass action through independent rank-and-file committees in schools, workplaces, and communities to prepare for strikes and collective resistance. Opposition to these attacks, as well as the Trump administration's rampage across agencies, freezing grants, removing databases, imposing censorship, and mass layoffs, is growing. We urge all supporters of the fight for public education to get involved today in the Educators Rank and File Committee. You can find these articles and more at wsws.org. The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.